Hey, welcome into the All Ball Podcast. I'm Doug Gottlieb, and you can listen to the Doug Gottlieb Show, whether it's on Sirius XM on a daily basis or on your iHeartRadio app or foxsportsradio.com. Follow me on Twitter. We list all the available places in which you can get the Doug Gottlieb Show. And of course, make sure you not only download, subscribe, you rate us, but tell a friend, have them download as well. This week, we're going to take a deep dive into the Boston Celtics, as well as to the DMV. My boy, Darren McClinton, is going to join us. He was a tremendous player at James Madison, played overseas. I played with him in the CBA for a minute and USBL as well. He's not only a trainer, but also an AAU coach and a guy who just knows and loves hoop. I thought you'd enjoy me catching up with D. Clint, who has his own podcast with his brother who played ball at Maryland. I thought that would be interesting, entertaining, and enlightening. Also joining us is Keith Smith. He covers the NBA for Yahoo Sports. You can follow him on Twitter. He also does the Celtics blog as well. So I want to get you a sense for what was going on with the C's, maybe what's going on with the Wizards. I'll give you my two cents here real quick on a couple things we've seen. I will point out this about the Houston Rockets, and I'm not laughing saying I told you so, because they're much worse defensively, much worse offensively now that they've had subtraction by addition by bringing in Carmelo Anthony. I think some of that we saw. In fairness, you know, they had a suspension with Chris Paul, and they got James Harden hurt. Right? So if you lose Chris Paul for a couple games and you lose James Harden for a couple games, with that top heavy a team and that top heavy a salary scale, you're not going to be as good. On the other hand, it's really, really hard to hide Carmelo Anthony. His game is one that doesn't really fit in the modern pace and space 3-and-D, you know, spread you out NBA. And I think it's also fairly, even though some of their pieces are have some consistency from last year, it's still kind of a new team and they're still kind of figuring it out. So I'm not giving them a pass. They haven't played well, but neither has Oklahoma City played well. Neither has the Wizards played well. Neither have the Lakers played all that well. And some of it is new pieces. Some of it is some guys learn to get along. Some of it is, hey, other dudes in the NBA are tired of hearing about some of these other top teams and they're coming ready to play. And some of it is some of these teams aren't as good as we thought. I think there's a combination of it. But my fear with Melo is what happens when you sign him to the bench. I think he'll see some success coming off the bench. It's just really hard for a guy who's always played 30, 35 minutes and got starters minutes and been a go-to guy to suddenly be an ancillary part. There's a pride and ego thing to it. You know, Derek Jeter wouldn't move to second base for A-Rod. He should have, but he didn't. And the machismo, people think the machismo of basketball is the only place. Like, no, not necessarily. Larry Fitzgerald is one of the only wide receivers to move from being outside a number one threat to moving in the slot. You know, Hines Ward did it some as well, became a great blocker. But those guys are few and far between. That devolving, or maybe it's evolving into understanding your body and your age and how you fit in, that takes a supreme amount of kind of emotional balance. And we don't necessarily create and foster that in the NBA when guys are seen as superstars. And a guy like Melo, who's the all-time leading scorer of USA basketball. We'll dig in there with Darren McClinton upcoming. My thoughts on the Lakers are, I think LeBron is really trying. He's trying to play this new way of moving the basketball. And I think he's picking his spots. For example, at the time of this recording, last night they took down the Dallas Mavericks, had a big lead, kind of gave it away and survived late. He made only one or two free throws late. I think he's trying to move the basketball. In the third quarter, he took over and decided, all right, within the confines of the offense and in the transition. I think the problem is that they're waiting on Brandon Ingram to play better. He hasn't. Rondo, his first night, he played well. Outside of that, hadn't played well. And some of their best shooters aren't shooting the basketball well. That's happened with the Wizards, right? Like, the Wizards didn't expect to play Jan Mahimi this many minutes, and they expected to shoot the basketball better. And just like Klay Thompson ends up, you know, going from a shooting slump to hitting 14 threes in a game, eventually the expectation is water finds its level. But it's going to be curious to see what happens with Ingram. He has to play better. Because if there's one guy that could be moved, it would be Ingram. Remember, he's the longest tenured Laker, right? He's the only guy drafted by Mitch Kupchak, I believe, still on this roster. And I think they all think he has more in him, but he hasn't played all of that well so far. It's one of the reasons the Lakers have struggled, although their schedule also being prohibitively difficult. And Jimmy Butler stepping up and making three fourth quarter threes is one of the reasons they're 3-5 right now today. As for the Thunder, a lot of people are talking about Andre Robertson still being out and Russell Westbrook not playing. That's why in preseason, that's why they're not playing as well. It's important, I think, to mention our vision of Andre Robertson is skewed. He was before he got hurt. Now he had a major knee surgery and then a cleanup knee surgery. We have no idea his level of athleticism and bounce when he gets back. So as far as the NBA goes, even the Celtics have been a little bit disappointing. And I think we got to take a breath, see what we like, see what we don't like. I think Gordon Hayward has been a little too passive. At times, Kyrie Irving's been a little too aggressive. We'll talk with Keith Smith about that. But in the NBA, the team that is most interesting has to be the Milwaukee Bucks. Because people in the league have talked about Giannis and his ability to take over games, take over the league. And he has Mike Budenholzer, who has done made some nice adjustments. And I think they've kind of adjusted the roster accordingly. I don't think they can keep up this. They're not going to run undefeated. But I don't know if they'll keep up the pace of being the best team record-wise in the East. Bud has done it before, back when he was with the Atlanta Hawks. But I do think you combined a player who continues to improve his jump shot and his decision-making with a team who's kind of played mostly together for a couple years now and a coach who fits how they want to play and understands how to utilize the spacing and also the length and versatility he has defensively. And maybe the Bucks are the team that we didn't talk enough about that have a legit shot to come out of the East. And Giannis is the type of game-breaking, game-changing player that we might be missing because he's in Milwaukee, because he hasn't gotten to an NBA Finals, because he's not playing for a traditional power in the NBA. We're not talking about enough, but it's going to be fascinating to see what happens next. All right, quickly on college basketball as we're getting ready for next week, we have the showdown in Indianapolis. You got four premier college basketball programs. And I want you to start the season with this thought in your mind. Get old and stay old, right? As I'll release my preseason rankings and my early season rankings, it's really hard to tell how good teams are going to be because we don't know the pace by which the freshmen will improve. But I can tell you that teams like a Kansas State, teams like a Clemson, teams like a Wisconsin, teams that bring back teams like an Oregon State, that bring back a couple of the best players in their league that are juniors and seniors, a Barry Brown, a Trace Tinkle, an Ethan Happ, even Davidson, he's only a sophomore, obviously, from Wisconsin. But there's so much youth in college basketball that if you start the season with guys with experience in 22, 23, sometimes 24 years old, you're going to be ahead of the curve. It's one of the reasons I think Clemson has an absolute shot, along with Virginia, to take down Duke in the ACC, even if Duke has more draft picks, you know, more first-round draft picks. End of the year, I think, in the NCAA tournament, we're likely to see some combination of Duke, Kentucky, Kansas, Duke, Kentucky, Kansas, in the Final Four. And then you have the Tennessees and the Virginias of the world. Oh, Gonzaga as well. And Gonzaga, of course, they have age, they have experience, they have transfers, which gives you age and experience. And the question about Gonzaga is always, you know, they front load their schedule and they try and sprinkle in some non-conference in the middle of their schedule. But this is a really young St. Mary's team, as we chronicled with Randy Bennett in one of our previous all-ball podcasts. And the point is that I don't feel like Gonzaga is going to be as severely challenged in the WCC as they have before by teams like a BYU who's beaten them twice on their court, or like a St. Mary's who's the last team to win the league and win the league tournament outside of Gonzaga. So, we'll have to figure out what Gonzaga is and what their level of play is heading into the tournament when they have this kind of weirdly unbalanced schedule compared to everybody else. That said, it should be a fascinating college basketball season. Hopefully most of these scandals have been put to bed and we can actually enjoy it. And when you watch Duke play, and you're going to fall in love with Zion Williamson's athleticism. It's R.J. Barrett who's actually the better player. And then I think the fact that Duke has a true point guard makes me think that Duke can finally achieve what their talent says they can achieve. They have experience playing together going to Canada. They got a point guard. They have just enough returners, just enough depth. I think they'll have enough shooting, especially if they play Zion Williamson at the five, definitely at the four. And I think there'll be some games which they overwhelm their opponents because even though they're exceptionally young, college basketball generally is young. So many have jettisoned college basketball to go to the NBA. But those are the five or six teams. Nevada's, of course, hanging out there, and Auburn is hanging out there. We'll see what else the Pac-12, if in Oregon behind Peyton Pritchard and now incoming freshman Bol Bol can make a run at the Pac-12 title and be another potential Final Four representative. USC as well. They lose a four-year starter at point, which I think people are underselling, but USC, a very, very talented roster as well. But the schools you need to know about outside of the Kansas States and the Clemsons and the Wisconsins and the older teams, maybe New Mexico as well, San Diego State as well, is Duke, Kansas, Kentucky, Gonzaga. Throw in Virginia, considering how good they were in the ACC and how much they return, I think that's where your Final Four is likely to have two or three teams at least come from that group of teams. All right, let's get you to the All Ball podcast. Let's get you to some of the interviews of the week. He's a contributor to Yahoo Sports NBA, at Real GM, and to the Celtics blog. Who better to talk about with maybe the most interesting team that is not discussed enough, I think, on a national basis than the Boston Celtics? Keith Smith joins us here in the All Ball podcast. And Keith, we're coming off of watching Kyrie Irving break out last night and get a big home victory over a Pistons team that has played really well out of the gate. But I think the bigger question is, here we are, what are we, 2 weeks into the NBA season. How would you characterize what you've seen from the Celtics so far?
Yeah, a little up and down and a little messy, I guess, is the best way to put it. It's tough when you're bringing back Kyrie Irving and Gordon Hayward and adding those two players who are really guys who need the ball a lot, you know, used to being the ones that carry an offense, and you're adding to them to a team that came with a game of the NBA Finals, it's bound to be a little messy. But I think they're starting to figure it out. We've seen signs of that over the last couple of games. And, you know, it's one of those things I know everyone in Boston is, you know, they were a little nervous early on, but those with the team feel like it'll be okay. We're going to get this sorted out sooner rather than later.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because, yes, the Raptors are off to a hot start and saw them get a big home win last night, and the Bucks are undefeated. But, like, look, if you don't like the way the Celtics are playing, you're going to hate the way that a team like the Rockets are playing, right? Or the way the Wizards are playing. So it hasn't been as smooth a transition as people would hope, but it's not like they're the Rockets where all of a sudden there's finger pointing, or the Wizards where people are talking about trading players or firing coaches already.
Yeah, absolutely not. There's none of that going on. These guys all get along great. They're all, you know, really happy. I think one thing that really helps is you have a group of players there in Boston who are extremely honest about what their role are and what their hopes are, both for themselves and for the team. You have guys like Terry Rozier and Marcus Morris who are on the record saying, sure, I'd love to start, but I know that's not going to happen here, and I know what my role is, and I want to win right now, and starting and more money and those things, that'll come down the line if it's supposed to. So it's one of those things where rarely do you have guys who are so open about their role in the NBA and then also accepting of that role. And that's where, you know, Boston's lucky compared to a couple of those other teams you mentioned where I think guys have a falsely inflated view of what their role maybe should be within their team, or really even just how good their team should be.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Let's talk about Kyrie, because there was some discussion. I think Tommy Heinsohn said he thought he looked heavy, which I hadn't heard from anybody. Maybe it was his haircut or his beard or something. I was told in the preseason and in training camp he looked great. He just wasn't hitting shots early in the year. And, you know, Kyrie is a guy whose game is really based upon his shot making. Everything else falls into place. Of course, you know, we're recording this podcast on a Wednesday after Kyrie, in a back-to-back matchup with the Pistons, lights them up, goes for 31 and only 16 shots, plays as efficient a basketball as he has all season long. In your opinion, was he out of shape? Was there something that changed? What's your assessment of why, at least shooting percentage-wise, he struggled?
Yeah, that one came out of nowhere for me as well. I hadn't heard that until Kyrie mentioned it after the game against the Pistons on Tuesday night. And, you know, here we are. Now it's kind of become a little bit of a story that, you know, I had to get myself in better shape because Tommy Heinsohn called me fat. You know, that seems a little out of nowhere, because all the reports were that he looked good. From my own view, he looked great. I thought he looked physically fine. You know, he was quick. He was explosive. He really had his, you know, handle going and moving. And I think it was just the reality of missing the shots came from two places. One, he was taking some contested jump shots that you know, weren't really in the flow of the offense. I think trying to get himself going, which I think that's a big chunk of what has changed over these last few games. I think Brad Stevens really said, hey, we got to move the ball, get back to the team we were for all of last year. And, you know, like, your shots will come. And then I think the second was he was taking a lot of these looks that were coming, you know, in points in the game where I felt like he maybe felt I have to carry the offense here and didn't have the trust in some of those younger guys like Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, because, you know, he missed that whole playoff run. So now that it's settled back in and now he's able to kind of just function within the offense and then pull it out when he really has to, it's starting to look a lot better and he's starting to look to, like the Kyrie Irving of old.
And then I feel like Gordon Hayward's the opposite, right? Like, I feel like Gordon Hayward, who was a low 20 a game all-star with the Utah Jazz, he's like Kyrie is a, you know, sheer force of will. I'm going to show everybody how good I am, take questionable shots. Whereas Gordon Hayward's been a little bit too passive and tried to fit in a little bit too much. Is that a fair assessment of why statistically he hasn't been as good at, or maybe as important as ultimately he will or should be?
Yeah, I think that is fair. I think Gordon Hayward, I think one of the things that attracted him to coming to Boston, you know, even before Kyrie was there, he agreed, you know, when it was still Isaiah Thomas, was I don't think he wants to be in a situation where I'm the man and I have to shoot it every time down. I think he wants to be part of the system and part of something bigger. And I think for him, what it is, but you need to take those shots when you have them. And when you have the mismatch, you need to take advantage of that. That's when the Celtics offense works best. They're really good at, I call it, relentlessly hunting mismatches. They find the guy who has the best chance to score, and they'll go to him over and over again. And I think that's something that Hayward has to get that mindset. And again, we're starting to see that come a little. And one thing that's helping him get there, they're putting the ball in his hands a lot and saying, hey, you be the playmaker here. Let the other guys play off you. And whether that's scoring it for himself or setting somebody else up, we're seeing, you know, him, you know, excel at doing both of those.
I think that's a great point. It's, you know, he actually plays a good amount of what you would call point guard or playmaker. Brad's very comfortable with him playing any position 1 through 5. I do think he's probably, you know, the most natural passer. You know, Brad was trying to convince me this summer when we were talking that, you know, Kyrie Irving's one of the 5 best passers in the league. I was like, well, that'd be great if he showed the rest of the world how good a passer he is. But I think Kyrie has the capability, not the mindset. Whereas Gordon has some of the capability, but a lot of the mindset, and it's one of those guys. It's one of those things to which I think that's why he's the right fit. And people, if you don't watch the Celtics as much as you do, Keith, you don't realize. You're like, wait, well, how's this all going to work? You have to have guys that are willing to sacrifice themselves in order for Jason Tatum ultimately to become what he can become, or Jaylen Brown to become what it can become. And then, as you smartly pointed out, this is the new wave of the NBA, which is relentlessly searching for mismatches. The difference with the Celtics as opposed to like a LeBron James-led team is, you know, a LeBron James team, you're just trying to get a mismatch on LeBron and then create help, and then he kicks off for a jump shot, whereas the Celtics have so many guys that can score. Simply moving the basketball, the mismatch will then present itself, right? That's more the way in which Brad's system and with this personnel it works, isn't it?
Yeah, I think the way I refer to it is it's manufacturing a mismatch versus letting it come naturally. And I think the LeBron example you used, that's manufacturing that mismatch. We saw that when the Celtics played the Cavaliers last year in the playoffs. They did everything they could to get Terry Rozier matched up with LeBron James because LeBron's just going to overpower him and do whatever he wants. With the Celtics, what they do is they just kind of let the ball flow, cause the defense to react, and then they find it generally somewhere, you know, halfway through the shot clock or so. So, okay, here's what switched, here's what was created, now let's get to that guy. And that may not mean it's the same guy all game long. It may just mean play to play, all right, we found the right one, let's get after it and get that shot.
All right, here's what I want to do. I want to go through the teams, since you've watched every game, go through the teams, give me one quick thought on, for example, the Pistons. Go.
Yeah, Blake Griffin, I think, has been really, really good. I think he is really stepping up. I think, you know, he has, you know, got the ball in his hands a lot. I'm really excited to see him, you know, develop into that, kind of truly being the franchise guy and stepping forward for Detroit.
Yeah, what's interesting is how much he struggled in that game in Detroit. in which they were blown out. Obviously played much, much better in the game in Boston. But this, you know, coming off of the explosive 50-point game, he struggled against the Seas going back to last Saturday. The Thunder finally got a big win last night, but when Boston traveled in there, it felt like a playoff atmosphere, and Jason Tatum played great. When you see the Thunder, what do you think?
Yeah, I think what it's there, it just still something doesn't feel right with their offense. It feels almost like it did when Kevin Durant was there, where it was your turn, my turn. A little bit of that with Russ and Paul George. I know, you know, Russ missed all the training camp. He's really still kind of playing himself into full peak, you know, ability there, but there's just something missing. And boy, do they miss Andre Robertson. People still underrate his importance to that team. Everybody says can't hit a free throw and can't hit a three. But that disregards just how good he is defensively. And against a team like Boston or even a team like Golden State, teams like that, you need his defense, and they're really missing it right now.
Yeah, and then the question becomes, when he does return, having an ACL injury and then having a backup, another surgery, is he ever going to be the Andre Robertson athletically of old? Like that, you know, that's a legit question. In addition to the fact that you're playing 4-on-5 on offense, you can make up for it if he's that good a defensive player and rebounder. But if he loses a step defensively, will that team ever live up to what I think their potential is? Your thoughts on the Orlando Magic, a franchise which seems to have been in rebuild mode now here for the last 5 years or so. Vucevic is a very talented player, but you know, they paid Aaron Gordon a bunch of money. I don't think he'll ever be a stretch four, let alone a three man. When you see Orlando, is there hope there?
Yeah, I think there's some hope, but it's, you have to project it down the line a little. You have to believe in that Jonathan Isaac, Mo Bamba, and Aaron Gordon are going to be able to develop, and that the three of them are going to be able to play together on the floor. And then you're going to have to hope that John Waltman and Jeff Hammond are able to go find guards that fit around them, because right now they just don't have enough shooting. The only confident shooter on the roster is Terrence Ross. And, you know, Ross will let it fly from anywhere on the floor. He's, you know, got that irrational confidence, if you will. But the rest of the guys, it's just rough. They're either, you know, they're guys who should be good backups on a good team instead of being starters for the Magic, which is why they're in the position they're in right now.
No, I mean, like, listen, if you want length and athleticism, Gordon, you mentioned Jonathan Isaac, who's super versatile, and Mo Bamba, who you would think 2 or 3 years from now projects, but they're all just kind of long, athletic, rangy. Like, this has become a game where you need that, but you also need skill. It's a shot makers league, and they don't have any shot makers, let alone true ball handlers as well. All right, last one is the Toronto. Well, I want to get to we'll get to the Sixers too. The Raptors beat the Celtics in Toronto. Obviously, their second game of the year. But the sense you get when you watch Toronto, you think Kawhi can take them a further step now that LeBron's not in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, I really do. And the thing with the Raptors is just everything fits so well with them. Everybody knows what their role is. Everybody's content to play that role. You've got, really, it's going to be Kyle Lowry and Kawhi are going to be the ones who get us our offense. And then everybody else is going to play off the two of them. Danny Green looks like, you know, the guy who he looked like with the Spurs a few years ago. You know, he's playing great defense and knocking down every open jumper he gets. And then the bigs are doing some stuff. Pascal Siakam has come almost from out of nowhere as this guy who all of a sudden he's defending, he's bringing the ball up. He gets a little out of control sometimes, but I think that's almost okay because it leaves him a little more unpredictable. So I think the Raptors, you know, they still get that deep bench too. So they're going to be really tough. It's one of those things where when you watched them play Boston, it was only a second game of the season for both teams where you really said, boy, I hope we could get 7 games of this come the spring.
Yeah, I guess my fear is I do think that Lowry hits his ceiling once he gets to the playoffs, that guys lock in on him a little bit more. And, you know, he's about 6 feet tall. He's in his early 30s. He's going to be like 33 here in March. And I think one of the things that people don't talk enough about with Toronto is there are times in which he struggles with the longer, better point guards and teams, you know, much more focused on it. But I agree with you. I mean, like, look, if last year you had your best season ever and you had DeMar DeRozan, you get rid of DeRozan and you add in Kawhi and you add in a guy like Danny Green, who is a perfect fit for the way in which they want to play, the Raptors should be better. I still think the Celtics are better, but I'm not convinced as of yet that the Celtics have figured out exactly who does what and when they do it. Last one is the Philadelphia 76ers. Look, Embiid's a guy who everybody likes because of his personality and what he can be. Everyone likes Ben Simmons because of his ability to create for himself and for others. But there seems to be a paucity of shooting there as well. And I'm not convinced you'll be able to fix Fultz during the year as nobody's guarding him. When you see the 76ers, are they going to take that next step this year?
Yeah, I don't think they're going to take that step further than really what they were this year, or this past season, I should say. They are in a spot where their chief rivals in the East, Boston and Toronto, are just horrible matchups for them. Because the Celtics, they do two things when they play the 76ers. They say, all right, we're just going to drop off Ben Simmons because he is not going to shoot. We're not worried about him shooting at all. And then they have enough size that most teams, they'll drop off Simmons, but he's so big, he can still get to where he wants to go, you know, even though guys are giving him three and four steps. Celtics have enough size that they can still hold their own when he gets there. And then the other thing they do is they bring in Aaron Baines and say, fine, Embiid, you might dunk on him once, but the other 10 possessions, he's just going to be up in your face, force you into stupid stuff and taking these terrible shots. And then that's where Embiid just plays right into it, because he still, you know, is in the sense, at this point in his career, he wants to beat guys and go at guys. We see this, you know, with certain guys, and Aaron Baines is that guy. Baines doesn't care if he dunks on him. Baines is like, that's fine, I'll shut you down on the other 10 possessions, I have no issue. In Toronto, we saw it the other night, they're starting to play them the exact same way. So Philadelphia's definitely got some problems, and a lot of it does revolve around the shooting, as well as they just don't have another creator off the dribble other than Simmons, unless Fultz can get there. And then that's only two, and I don't know that that's enough to win when you're, you know, getting into the playoffs. And playoffs is about creating your own offense. If you can't do that, things are going to break down and really get tough for you.
I think it's fascinating. I said that was the last thing. Why are the Wizards so bad?
It just doesn't. It's a lot of personalities in one room, and Dwight Howard's coming back, and I don't know that that's going to make things any better. I'm kind of conditioned at this point to believe that's probably going to make things worse. It feels like it's one of those where they've been together too long, too. You know, we're going into year four-ish, five of this same group, you know, the same core guys all together. And when you're not winning at a high level, like, say, Golden State is, when it's the same guys together all the time, they just wear on each other, and it's really time to break it up. And unfortunately, we're looking at it and you're saying, how are they going to break it up? They've got all these terrible contracts. They've only got five players with guaranteed salaries next year, and they're already over the salary cap with just those five players. So it's one of those where if you look at it, I don't know how this gets better unless they can really get somebody to take on Bradley Beal or Otto Porter and just break things up. And I think that might be the direction they have to go, is just break things up, go in a different direction, and see if just change for change's sake sparks something in Washington.
Keith Smith. Keith, awesome stuff. Great information. And I can't tell you how much I appreciate you joining us in the All Ball podcast.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
One of the most important things we do for our health every day is brush your teeth, yet most of us don't do it properly. That's why you need Quip. Q-U-I-P is better electric toothbrush created by dentists and designers. Quip was designed to make brushing your teeth simple, affordable, and even enjoyable. It's got sensitive sonic vibrations, gentle enough for your sensitive gums. Got the built-in 2-minute timer pulses every 30 seconds to remind you to switch sides. And maybe most importantly, it's got brush heads that are automatically delivered every 3 months for just $5. I love Quip because it's easy, it's smart, and makes my teeth shiny. Quip starts at just $25 if you go to getquip.com/Doug, D-O-U-G, right now to get your first refill pack for free with a Quip, Q-U-I-P, electric toothbrush. That's your first refill pack free at getquip.com/Doug. This is a special treat. Guy, I've been trying to get on the All Ball podcast, and we'll have to do a longer version where he's going to tell stories about playing overseas and giving it to dudes and growing up in the DMV and all the guys he knows. But he's a former pro baller who was a tremendous, tremendous scoring point guard. He's turned into a skill development guru. He's a coach. He's got the McClinton Basketball Academy. Works with Team Takeover. He's got the McClinton All-Stars from uh, from Maryland, USA. Follow him on Twitter, at DMAC Basketball. Darren McClinton joins us. Darren, now you guys have your own pod, right? Now, tell me about your own podcast that you have.
Yes, we do. It's called The Hot Box. And I started it based on, you know, still a lot of guys in this area. We still play basketball and go at it because we're still competitors, a lot of former players. And afterwards, we go into the sauna, man, and we just talk sports and talk junk and you know, kick ideas off each other and argue and all of it encompassed in, you know, getting a sweat and cooling off after you know, getting it in on the court. So,
yeah,
you know, I was like, you might as well just take that idea and you know, get on the air with it. So
who is it?
We've been doing it for about a year. It's myself and my brother. He's a former point guard at University of Maryland.
Yeah. So your brother played Maryland. You played at James Madison. So he was clearly better than you, right? So it starts with that is like, look, he was more highly recruited, more highly touted. And so that little inferiority complex, I think it comes up all the time, right?
It does. We argue, we go back and forth. We, you know, some people that listen to the show, they ask who's better. You know, he's humble. And, you know, I got something to prove. So it comes up a lot, man.
Okay, so let's get to a couple of things that, I mean, you're perfect for this. Let's start with the Wizards. They have John Wall, Brad Beal. I mean, I know Scott Brooks, and we had him on the podcast, so he kind of explained the Dwight Howard thing, like, look, I don't know when Dwight Howard, since Orlando a long time ago, it hasn't really worked in terms of a team, but he hadn't played yet, so we can't blame their dysfunction on Dwight Howard. What the hell's the matter with the Wiz?
Now, I have two things with the Wizards. Now, first off, they're awful rebounding team. They're last in total rebounds. And the presence in the middle. Now, Marcin Gortat, who's now with the Clippers, we traded him away, and he's a former teammate of mine. We played together in Germany. He wasn't the inside physical force that you kind of want to see, but he was a total team guy, man, and he did a lot of things that don't show up in the stat sheet that clearly the Wizards are missing right now.
Yeah.
Dwight Howard has yet to suit up, so I can't say anything more than he'll be a rim protector. He'll change that. He'll be able to start the fast break immediately with his shot blocking ability and rebounding ability. But it's yet to be seen. He's supposed to debut on Friday against when the Thunder come to town. So we'll see.
So that's one. So rebounding is one, and Dwight Howard can rebound. Although, like, look, the game has so changed now because the game is so spread out that you know, you have to have a guy who runs. You have to have a guy who sprints to a rebound, right? You got a Jordan Bell types, guys that run into rebound both offensively and defensively. And the thing that they had with Gortat was like, look, he'd frustrate him because he's standing on there with his hand up, and you know, wants the ball, and those guys are like, look, that's not, you know, in terms of efficiency wise, posting up is not terribly efficient. But there were other things that he brought. He brought toughness. He'd set, you know, he set good screens, which I think does,
screens.
You know, but loosen, like Andrew Bogut, people don't realize how important he was for the first championship for the Warriors, right? Because like that dude set great screens and sometimes illegal screens. So when you were guarding Steph, you not only had to worry about Steph, but you had to worry about sometimes running into Andrew Bogut, who's a huge human being. Gortat had some of that. So maybe they undervalued him, and we'll see how it works with D12. I guess the big question, maybe this is your second part, can Wall and Beal coexist?
And that's my second part. It's the locker room, because you know, and you're a point guard like myself, and you know that leadership starts at the point guard position. And just as recent as after the last game, I listened to the presser, the post-game presser, and they were talking to John Wall, and he was stating how, you know, it's up to him. He's got to, you know, galvanize these guys and get them together and get out of this slump. And then they talked to Bradley Beal, and he's saying it's up to him. He's got to galvanize the guys and bring them together, and he takes the blame for that. I don't think it can be both of them. And so one is telling the truth and one is not. So, and they're both elite all-star players, and I'd be fine if they were saying, if Wall said, me and me and Bill, or me and Brad, and then Bill said, yeah, me and John, that we've got to, you know, we've got to get these guys, raise these guys' level. But they were each saying me. And I just, there's something about that. And after the Clippers game, Doc Rivers said, the first thing that Scottie Brooks said to him was, you guys really look like you all love playing with each other. And, you know, you play together as a team. So there's something to be said there as well. And I don't think that the locker room problems is a fix by D12. He hasn't been a great locker room guy, you know, in his past as well. So I don't think him coming into the mix, you know, he hasn't showed up yet. And the togetherness is what they need. And he had to go on tour in China when the team had their outing out in California. So he wasn't there for that either. You know, there's a lot to be said with, you know, continuity and cohesiveness that starts in the offseason, especially when you got a new free agent coming in town.
Why do you think the Thunder have struggled?
Well, I don't know whether they're going to try to start Schroeder and Westbrook together, even with Roberson comes back. I think Roberson missing these 2 months is really hurting them. Great defender, great team guy, great glue guy. And then bringing Schroeder in, who's a starting point guard, into, you know, Russ's town.
I think if you go back to when Russ had KD and they went to the finals, obviously uh-huh. James Harden's better than Schroeder. I'm not sitting here trying, but what the Thunder guys told me then, Scotty told me then, the front office guys, like, look, as good as Russ is as a point and he's dynamic, you put him off the ball where he doesn't have to worry about running things, just gets it and goes. And I think that whether they start him or not, I do think that they want that to be their finishing group. And you mentioned continuity, but, like, look, if you don't have Russ for the whole preseason and now all of a sudden you're trying to do it's hard on the fly. It's like Markelle Fultz trying to fix his jump shot on the fly. Like, you need a long time together to get cohesiveness.
Right.
And there's great expectations of Russell Westbrook, 2 years in a row averaging a triple-double. There's great expectation that team because everybody thought, well, Paul George is back second year, more cohesive, they'll start winning right away. I still think that'll work. My fear with the Thunder is there's this hope, they're holding out hope for Roberson coming back and being the same dude. You come off two surgeries in the same knee, you're not going to be the same athletically. And that's his whole game is defense and rebounding. That's really my fear with this team. I think the rest of the stuff kind of gets worked out.
Yeah, it's all about how you finish and not how you start. And you made a great point about, you know, which team, which lineup they want to finish games with and go down the stretch with. And I do think it will end up being Schroeder and Russ in there together. It'll take some time to iron out because, you know, I work with Jeremy Grant in the offseason. He's from here as well. And,
yep.
You know, we were working on some pick and roll stuff, and I was telling him, I was like, you know, where do you usually get it? And he kind of told me, when you're dealing with Russ, you know, you just got to be ready to get it whenever. You never, you know, you just got to play off of him. So that's,
yeah.
You know, that's different from, you know, if Schroeder's handling the ball. So, you know, there's some things that will get ironed out. And I think down the stretch, they'll be in the mix. But it's going to take some time because Schroeder was running the show the whole preseason.
Do you like LeBron with the Lakers?
Yes. Actually, I do. I do. I think LeBron is kind of coasting right now, and he's so good that he can do that because he's giving guys, you know, an opportunity to really express themselves, guys like Josh Hart, guys like Brandon Ingram. You know, they're coming into their own, and I think that when it comes down to the nitty gritty, LeBron is just going to take games over. And that's what happens when you get towards playoff time and second half of the season after the Christmas break. So, or after the All-Star break, I think the Lakers will be fine. I really do.
I think they'll be better. And I think they're still trying to, I agree with you. He's trying to figure out who can play and who can't play. I think they're trying to figure out, you know, Lonzo or Rondo. They played Rondo down the stretch against Minnesota. I thought that was a mistake, even though Lonzo wasn't playing well that night, just because Lonzo can make, he can make a catch and shoot jump shot. Rondo's doing so many other little things, but can't, he won't even take a catch and shoot jump shot. And they do need, they need some of their shot makers to jump up and make shots. I like Hart more off the bench than I do as a starter. I think sometimes his ceiling kind of gets exposed. And I know I'm talking bad about guys from your area, but I'm not really talking bad about Hart. I think he's a really good player. I just think, like, that's a hard position. Like, you know, Jimmy Butler can just jump up and shoot over him. He's just bigger and a little bit better, right?
He's an energy guy as well.
Yes.
So, you know, as you know, energy guys, you know, if you play them long periods of time and long stretches, you know, some of their weaknesses do show.
Yeah. No, I mean, look, that's the part that I don't think people do a good enough job on TV and sometimes on radio of understanding that positions, like, there's different guys for different roles. And like a Josh Hart coming off the bench as a sixth man, even if he plays the exact same minutes as a starter, you're matching up usually against inferior players. It gives him a chance to ramp up the energy, kind of change the tempo of a game. There's a lot of starting guard. There's a lot of starting guards like that. Like, I would contend that Schroeder is another example of that. Like, I don't love Schroeder playing 35 minutes a game, playing 40 minutes a game. But if he plays, you know, 25 minutes a game, and you go, hey man, when Russ is out, I want you to just go and try and score and attack. And when Russ is in the game, I need you to, you know, be on the ball defensively so he can chill a little bit, and I need you to facilitate a little more. I think that's, sometimes guys have specific roles that they fit in. Some of it's about who they match up with, some of it's about kind of the pace of the game, and some of it's about just the makeup of guys. You have to know the makeup of those guys. And I kind of think that's what LeBron and frankly Luke Walton's trying to figure out, because You and I know this, and other people don't. They see it, but they can't really express it. It's that last year with the Lakers, people weren't getting up for Laker games. Like, they were crummy. Like, they were bad, and they had a bunch of young guys. Now every game that you step on the floor with LeBron James, that's like a playoff game, and so you have no idea how Brandon Ingram's going to react in a real game, or how, perfect example is Jimmy Butler. Like, he hadn't been playing that great, and all of a sudden he plays out of his mind. Why? Because he's playing against LeBron James and the Lakers, a franchise he might want to play with this season or next season, and he's trying to show out for them. I think that Luke and LeBron are
every time.
Yeah, it's the same sport, but it's a different game.
Yeah. Now the thing about playing with a guy like LeBron is every possession, when he kicks out to you, you're expected to make that shot, you know.
Yeah.
And if you can't consistently make it, you know, you're under that microscope. And now they're saying, you know, normally these guys are considered pretty good shooters, but, you know, it's a more pressured shot when it's coming from LeBron because he needs you to knock that down. As you know, in your role with that team. And now they're saying the Lakers have, you know, shooting woes and major problems on the perimeter, where if guys were able to just relax and shoot their normal shot, you know, I think they shoot a higher percentage. It's tough playing alongside LeBron, you know?
Yeah. No, yeah, no, listen, Chris Bosh, Miles Simon is one of my closest friends. I remember, you know, he was Chris Bosh's guru, and Chris Bosh would say, like, look, LeBron has no problem passing to people. Like, he gives you a good pass. He gives it to you right in your shot pocket, right where you want it. But you better make it in the first half, or he is not going to pass you in the second half. Like, you got to earn his trust. If you earn his trust, he'll always find you. He does not care, but you got to earn his trust. And I think those guys are struggling with the level of play being amped up and the level of importance of every shot, whether it's the pressure of it or the expectations of LeBron. Now, are you a LeBron guy or a Jordan guy?
Jordan guy.
Why?
Jordan is the ultimate competitor. Jordan has that killer instinct. I compare Kobe more to Jordan than I do LeBron to Jordan. I think if they were to play one-on-one, and I've seen this, people have brought this up, if they play one-on-one, Jordan would win, regardless of LeBron's size advantage. I think Jordan would win because Jordan will cut your throat to beat you.
I agree with you. I'm completely with you. It's a way of, and I think it's basketball is so different than anything else, especially your basketball players generally. And you tell me if I'm wrong. Every level I've ever played at, the guy who's your best player at the end of a game, you give him the ball, and sometimes even if it's a questionable shot, you have a feeling that he's going to take it and he's going to make it. And LeBron is just different in that he has always been willing to let his teammates make those shots, even if he starts with the basketball. He's told people like he gets great joy out of other guys making shots, other guys winning games. It's just it's a different sort of wiring. And people equate it to Magic Johnson. But Magic had the killer instinct, dude. Magic would, made the baby sky hook in the lane. And so I do think that for the best of the best, like those guys are licensed killers. And I don't think LeBron, even though he's made more shots recently, I don't think he's wired the same way as those guys. And that's why I think a lot of former players, plus, you know, we saw Jordan, we lived the Jordan thing. We understood all the different shots and ways in which guys were draped all over him. The game was different. You know, you couldn't play downhill. You couldn't play, you know, guys were hand checking you. And there was a power forward in the lane as well as a center in the lane. And now oftentimes there's nobody in the lane. And so it's a much easier path for him. So it's a different sport, but I tend to agree with you. All right, here's a question. Who's better, Kevin Durant or LeBron James right now?
That's a tough one. I'm going to go with LeBron. Kevin Durant's a better scorer. Kevin Durant, he's closing the gap, and I would say they're probably equal as far as a defender.
Mm-hmm. LeBron, a little bit of reputation defensively. A little bit of reputation defensively because he can't guard guards anymore. He doesn't move like he used to, and he smartly, you'll watch him now, he guards a lot of centers so he can take some plays off. But, I think historically
right
LeBron
A lot of his block shots are from chasing, and a lot of his block shots come from off the ball where Kevin Durant, he'll get on the ball block shots, and he's – and you're right. You know, his wingspan is he's able to slide his feet with – he moves like a guard. LeBron used to move like that, some years back. But I just think LeBron's ability to guard from the five to some twos, that versatility, to be able to bang in the post a little bit – and be more physical than KD. I'd say it's almost even on the defensive end, but overall, an effect on winning to go along with those skills offensively and defensively, I'd give the slight edge to LeBron right now. Even though KD's a home guy, homegrown.
No, I know. I'm asking. I have all homegrown questions for you. Okay, here's one.
I know
you do. Are you willing to admit that Carmelo is going to ruin the Rockets?
It's looking that way. And I said this on my podcast. My brother was saying that he was going to ruin the Rockets. And I was like, you can't – as offensively minded as D'Antonio and the Rockets are, that you've got to think that he's going to add some value to them and give Chris Paul – some really good options on offense, but his lack of defense and his lack of conditioning is glaring right now. And with Harden out, it's looking bad for the Rockets. They're trying everything they can to bring Butler in. I don't know how he is as far as a locker room guy. I know that Chris Paul is a fiery type leader. I don't know how that's working out, but he seems to be detrimental to that team right now.
Yeah. I mean, I actually think some of it over the last couple of years, there's been more effort defensively. I think his body now is kind of shot and he's kind of washed. And I also think his game, he was the best scorer in the league. What Kevin Durant is now, he was, if you go back 5-7 years ago. But remember, he was amazing in the mid-range, in the post, and probably the weakest part of his game, but he could do it was shooting a three. And now, once he's become kind of a secondary or even tertiary player on offense, it's much more about shooting jump shots, and that's not his game. Like, his game takes a give me the ball, get out of the way.
He's a rhythm guy, dude. He needs volume shots.
People don't understand? Right. This is it's like the hardest part of for you, for example, right? And for people who don't know, Darren was a great, I think, scoring point guard, right? that you could get the ball and you could go get buckets. And probably if you were coming out of college now, I think you would have an even better shot of making it. Is that a fair way of, especially as a backup guard,
spot
to come
on,
in and just get buckets?
On.
Huh?
Spot on.
Okay.
Yes, you're
so
right.
So as the game has evolved, it's kind of evolved in your favor. It's evolved against him. But the hardest part about making it in the pros when you're coming in as a backup is all of us, from the time we started like sixth grade, we had the ball in our hands a bunch. We had a ton of a volume of touches, a volume of possessions, a volume of opportunities to take shots.
Yes.
And now you get to the NBA and they're like, hey, listen, you're going to play against better players. You're going to play half as much time as you used to. You're going to have to shoot from further out against better competition, and you're going to get a quarter of the shots you used to, and you got to shoot a higher percentage than you. That's a really hard. He's having to make that adjustment as like a 33-year-old man. Like that's a 35-year-old dude. That's really hard to do when you've done one thing. He has been a go-to scorer, get me 25 shots a game since birth, and now all of a sudden, old dog, new tricks. It's really, really hard to learn, and his body's a little shot, and his game doesn't fit the way the Rockets or really the NBA is trending.
You're right. You're right. You can't. It's very hard. I'm not going to say you can't, but it's very hard, like you said, to ask a volume shot guy to become a corner three jump shooter and be efficient in a less amount of time with a less amount of touches. It's very hard to do.
All right, his podcast called Hot.
A guy of his caliber that's the leading scorer in Team USA history, and yep. You know, with all the accolades and the way he's gotten it done in the past. Yeah,
everybody says, "Hey, I'll sacrifice. I want to win a championship." And then all of a sudden, you're getting five shots a game, and maybe you're out at the end of a fourth quarter, and you're like, "But that's not really the way I saw it playing." All right, here's the most important question that you're going to use on the Hot Box on your next podcast. The best player from the DMV to never make it is who?
To never make it.
Yes. Like in California, there's a guy named Jimmy Mann and there's Shea Cotton, right? Shea Cotton was on the cover of Sports Illustrated, you know, when he was in eighth grade, right? And Shea was left-handed beast, 6'5", when he was like a freshman in high school and never played a game in the NBA. So when I say didn't make it, you could have made it and played a little bit in college, but made it to the league, and you're like, everybody who grew up around here knows this dude should have made it, whether it was drugs or women or bad luck or making bad decisions off the court, on the court with coaching or whatever, he never made it. Who's your guy?
There are a lot of those cases from the DC area. This is an unbelievable hotbed for basketball. It's a tough question. I would have to say, if I was to go with one, it would be Stacy Robinson Sr. Stacy Robinson Sr.
Tell me about him as a player.
He was a McDonald's All-American, you know, his parade All-American out of Dunbar High School here in Washington, D.C. He was Digger Phelps called him the best high school player in the country, hands down. Coming out of high school, and you know, he had some substance abuse issues and you know, behavioral things that kept him from, you know, even playing in college. So, you know, it stopped after high school. And it's scary to see, to know you know, how far he would have taken his game if he didn't have those things in place. And it's a lot of guys like that. But yep. That's the one that would stand out for me first and foremost.
You're super close with franchise with Stevie Francis, who of course did make it.
Yeah.
But I would say the lasting image of franchise is a guy who didn't live up to his potential. Was it just off the court? Why did Stevie Francis not last as long in the NBA or have as big an impact as he should have?
Well, it was also injury. A lot of Steve's game was predicated on athleticism and explosiveness. And, you know, guys like Stoudemire come to mind, McDice come to mind. When they had that microfracture surgery that takes away their explosiveness, you know, the difference between Steve was 6'2", 6'3", on a good night, and these guys were 6'10", you know, so they can kind of change their game – and still be effective. But it's hard when you're a guard, an explosive point guard at that, and that is 95% of your game, and a lot of that is taken away from you. So yeah. I would say, you know, a combination of those two.
Yeah, he was a bad boy though, wasn't he?
Oh my goodness! Yeah, he could do some things athletically that I could only dream of and have never seen before. We used to work out together in the summer times, and you know, running a 400, he was doing it at track star level, you know, Olympic track star level without stretching. I got stories for days. You know that, Doug.
Yeah, I know. We're gonna tell some of those stories in upcoming podcasts. You're just a ton of great information. By the way, what's funny about Steve Francis is you'd be like, did he have a good NBA career? People be like, dude averaged over 20 a game 3 different years, like for a 6'3 guard. And that's one of those things to which, you know, it's weird. It's like Stephon Marbury, who has like a museum in China, right? Like Stephon Marbury was an all-star. Like, but Stephon Marbury could have been, you know, a perennial all-star, could have been, but I think he didn't live up to it. And he had some of the off the court stuff. And also his game was so based on athleticism as well, that the lack of development of some of the basketball IQ stuff and when to do what, I think, you know, kind of hurt him. But Steve Francis was an unbelievable player, man. What a talent. How can someone download your podcast?
All right. It's we're on Facebook Live. The page is First Amendment Sports with the number one ST Amendment Sports. And as soon as you like the page and follow the page, the podcast will come on. We go every Tuesday night. We will soon be on we'll have it on our YouTube page as well, for everybody to download. But it's a great show about the DMV area, Redskins. We're all diehard Redskin fans, Wizards, Nationals, and Capitals. You know, we just got to
stand. How are you gonna talk hockey? Don't start talking hockey. Come on, man. You don't have to talk hockey.
Well, our show is the Hot Box, and it's a basketball based show. We also have other podcasts on under First Amendment Sports, which our producer, he does a really good job of covering everything DMV, but we go national too. I like to talk about the NBA as a whole and the whole NCAA, and you know, we cover the WCAC, which is the Catholic League here in DMV. So we just got a 2-year deal to cover that conference. You know all the games, and we're going to be streaming them. So I'm pretty excited about what we got going forward.
Well, listen, I'm happy for you. I'm happy that you're helping so many guys try and fulfill their basketball dreams. More importantly, love to catch up. That's because what you don't know is, like, I always came in with the mentality, wherever I was, I struggled to be friendly with other guys that played my position. You know, like in college, when I was at Oklahoma State, Joe Atkins was one of my best friends, but he played a 2-guard, so he played with me.
Uh-huh.
Right. So when you and I were going at it with whether it was in the CBA or with the Oklahoma Storm, we're on the same team. Like, I just struggle with it. I'm like, this guy is so cool to me and he's so nice and I like him so much, but we're fighting for the same minutes. It was such a conflict.
Right,
but I learned from watching you that, like, look, you can want to kick somebody's ass every day and still be boys with them, right? And still really, really enjoy their presence. But I will tell you that before I met you, I'd never experienced that. And so after our first year with the Storm together, I went and I played in mm-hmm. Russia. And I'll never forget, the other point guard was a Lithuanian dude. And I was like, I want to kick his ass in practice every day. But I was just trying to be cool. Like, it didn't. And he was having none of it. Like, none of it. Like, he didn't like me. He wouldn't look at me. He wouldn't talk to me. He wouldn't shake hands with me. They would speak in Russian about me, and then I learned to speak some Russian, so I knew he was talking shit on me or whatever. But it was the one thing that I took from you, which is you can absolutely try and be a killer and earn minutes for somebody in practice or in games and still just be a good dude afterwards, because we all just love ball and love to hang out, and it's something that I try and share with other people that I learned about being a true professional.
For sure. You hit the nail on the head, man. I've played so many places, so just like you, and you know, I've got teammates that, you know, I still keep in contact with, and you know, form great relationships with. You know, we played with some great talented guys, even at the same position. You know, your Randy Livingstons, your DeJuan Weeds, Rusty LaRue's, guys like that, you know, that were all great players. And think about it, we all played that same position. And I'm still, you know, in contact and you know, just goes to show. Even and we still stay in contact. And I've been following what you're doing. You're doing great things. And, you know, I'd like to catch you up on a lot of the stuff that I've been doing as well. So
thank you
for having me, you know.
Yeah, we'll do that offline. I will tell you this about Randy Rutherford. You know, you and I did battle. We battled off like 13 dudes to make the Idaho Stampede, right? You'd played there the year before. And Aubrey Reese was hurt, so you and I kind of made the team. We did team pictures. I don't know if you remember this. We did team pictures at the downtown arena. And Brian Gates, who's now an assistant with the Kings, right? He calls me. He's like, yo, dude, yo, you and D. Clint, you're our guys. You made it. Like, why don't you and Angie get together? My girlfriend, who's now his wife, driving up from Oklahoma, like, we can share a U-Haul. It's like, straight bet, right? So we go and we take the, we take the team picture, and I look down at that little vomitorium where dudes walk on and off the court, and I see this tall dude, and I was like, that's Randy Livingston. I just got cut. And we go and play the College of Southern Idaho, and it was a scrimmage, right, before we were going to play opener, and all of a sudden I go from, like, battling you for minutes to not even taking off the sweats, and I was like, dude, why did they take me on this trip if they weren't even going to play me? And, but I love Randy to death. He was one of those guys that I know he made it to the league, but man, if he hadn't hurt his knee at ABCD camp, what could have happened? We got to run, Darren. Thanks so much for joining us. Love what you're doing in the DMV, and we'll talk to you real soon.
Hey, thanks guys. Thanks for having me.
That's it for All Ball. Remember, not only download, subscribe, and rate, but make sure you tune into the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio, the iHeartRadio app, or Sirius XM on a daily basis. It's 3 to 6 Eastern Time, 12 to 3 Pacific. In the meantime, next week, we'll do a recap of that incredible showdown in Indianapolis, what we make of for the elite programs in college basketball, seeing them bang heads on the hardwood floor for the first time. I'm Doug Gottlieb. This is All Ball.